Blabla. Ce podcast est une production Blabla Studio.
Bienvenue dans Track Record, le podcast qui donne la parole aux DJ. Je suis Pauline de Saint-Sauveur, je suis journaliste et surtout fan de musique électronique. À travers ce podcast, je vous invite à la découverte de personnalités tout aussi passionnantes que leur musique, à une rencontre sans filtre avec des artistes qu'on entend plus souvent jouer que parler. Alors vous êtes prêts pour un tête-à-tête avec les meilleurs DJ? C'est le moment de monter le son et d'appuyer sur play. Bonne écoute!
Welcome to Track Record, the podcast that gives the floor to the DJs. Today, for a second episode of season 2, I'm honored to welcome the Acid House revolutionary and Chicago legend, DJ Pierre, who will play tonight at the Silencio Club in Paris for a Belle Époque party that promises to be one of a kind. Welcome to Paris, Pierre.
Hey.
And thank you for being here with us.
This is amazing. I look forward to this.
If you will allow a somewhat different introduction than usual, I will let Edouard, who invited you to play tonight at Belle Époque, and who you have known for a long time, to introduce you to our audience. Edouard, here you go.
Hi. Hello, Pierre and Pauline. And hello to all Track Record listeners. This announcement is very special to me. This is not only the pioneer of acid house music or a Chicago legend that is coming to play tonight at our home of Silencio. This is a deeply respected friend that honors us with his presence. DJ Pierre is the shepherd of house music, and I met him back in the 2000s, whose career, music, and message helped me and pushed me to be the DJ and party promoter I am today. I'm thrilled to finally host him again in Paris after so many years, and tonight will be memorable.
Wow, I'm just hearing that. I'm humbled. I had no idea.
Cool.
Wow.
Thank you, Pierre.
Thank you, Edouard, for this great introduction, and see you soon for the rest of the interview. Ciao!
To do a little introduction on factual notes about you, for those who know you a little bit or not, you are now listening to a conversation with someone who is to house music what Picasso was to Cubism, a revolutionary that brought a completely different point of view to the house music made in the 80s. Then, like any cultural revolution, acid house spread to all levels, even to pop music now. Since his first acid tracks under the name Future in 1985, DJ Pierre has released 104 more tracks, including 3 albums and 76 singles and EPs. Thank you, Discogs.
Oh, have I? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Discogs is pretty, precise, usually.
Yeah.
You worked with the biggest names in the industry, signed on the biggest labels, and you keep being in the loop by working with up-and-comers such as Chic Lauren, recently,
yeah,
and Monkey Safari.
Yeah.
Most also. Yeah. You have to listen also to your 1979 I Feel Love, which is...
I really love doing that project. Yeah.
And is now trending at 700,000 streams on Spotify, that one.
Oh, wow.
Just to give a few figures about you. But to get back to here and now, how does it feel to be back in Paris? And how did you first come here? And how have you seen the scene evolving over the past years?
You know what? I'm really excited to be back in Paris. I'm ready to grab one of those flags and start rioting myself, you know, because this world is just being turned upside down, you know. So I'm ready to just cause this musical revolution to take flight and just stage two with it, you know. I just want to come in and just join and kind of help stabilize things in music in terms of getting back to the roots. And it just taken me back to the first time I came here. You would never guess who brought me here the first time.
No, I'm sure I cannot guess.
Well, so Here's a hint. The first club I played at was the Queen Club.
Okay, so it must be in the 90s, right?
Yep. And who was the programmer there? And he was bringing people in to learn how to make the music. David Guetta.
You're joking me.
No.
Wow, that's the first DJ I heard in a big venue. I was 14. So it was about the time you came there.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It was interesting.
Yeah, he was completely underground at the time. Yeah, he was doing
the real
cooking.
David Guetta.
Yeah.
You know.
The one from the Enfer also, Inferno.
Oh, okay.
Club. It was the same kind of the same years. But so, I didn't know it was at Queen. I had no idea. Queen,
so you have to think about this person actually was truly underground.
He was.
As a DJ. He brought a lot of us over here for the first time.
David, if you hear us, hello. Oh, my God. I'm completely... Because I remember the time, but him there, no. Yeah. This is crazy. Okay. And so how do you think now Paris can go back to a bit of revolution underground, some kind?
Well, I think Paris is already doing it, but I don't think they get enough recognition for it because there still are amazing clubs here. But I just think as far as the media, they promote more EDM-ish type of people and acts, so you don't really realize how big or how vibrant the love of the music that's still in the underground scene, because that's not what's being pushed.
Yes.
But I believe if they were to push that, then it can infect the youth and the people that are just coming in.
We need the second David Guetta. Yeah. Yeah. Somehow.
That's what stories need to be talking about.
You know? Totally. No, I completely understand.
Gotta change the narrative. The narrative isn't to make that popular. The narrative is to make these EDM type more commercial pop sounds, just to make it seem like that's the place to be at, you know?
Yeah, but it's not the, like, it's not the story. It's just what the story was made of.
I often say if we can make it more balanced, just always tell the story truthfully and factfully. But the story that's told in any media outlet and source that's more mainstreamish always has an agenda with a plan and a story that they want to tell and make the popular thing. So we have to always think that way.
But you know, as in fashion and other entertainment and cultural, and we're going to talk about that, it all started with the underground, to go mainstream.
And the underground never leaves. The underground is always still there.
Hopefully it's not eaten by, you know,
what I mean is, like, even with rock and roll, any kind of music, there still is a path that's there before it ascends higher.
Yes.
When you first jump in, it's still there. But where it used to be spoken about and talked about, now it's never talked about. And it makes you think it's not there.
But it's still there.
Right.
But you just have to find new paths within that, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to go back to your past then and make a little jump in history.
Yeah.
Because what interests me is like to know how acid for you was born in terms of culture. Because I heard you talking a lot about the technical side, which is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But you spoke about that a lot. And you can find, I will put in the notes of the episode, some very good interviews you made about explaining how you managed to like turn the knobs and make something completely different. What I would love to talk about today is how the scene of the time, exactly what you're saying, how you find your path within that scene in 1985 in Chicago. Like, how would you say the context at the time, the city, the art scene, the people you were surrounded with, all led you to that turn of the knobs that made history and revolution, brought a revolution to music. So what was, to be really short, how was it to be a musician in Chicago in 1985? And what were the challenges at the time?
For me, you have to think about, at the time, Chicago was either Frankie Knuckles or Ron Hardy. You know,
from Music Box,
Music Box and Frankie Knuckles, the warehouse.
So
I never went to the warehouse at that early stage of my career, even once. I was first introduced to the more deeper house sounds at the Music Box with Ron Hardy. And
it was already a choice and a crew then, right?
Yes.
You already chose a path between two.
Well, like, the path was chosen for me from Spanky, the other member of Future. And he was the one that just kept saying, hey, you got to hear this guy Ron Hardy. Because he would complain because I was still playing like stuff like a lot of the kind of like music of the time, like A-E-I-O-U, that one old track. And I was still dropping Italo Disco, which was dope and stuff like that. But I was like scratching and stuff. I was doing all that, you know, because that was kind of popular at the time. And he's like, yeah, man, but that ain't house music. you know, you got to come to the music box to hear what house music is. And he always pop up because I'll DJ in my garage and then it'll always be a crowd of people there and stuff like that. And he'll bring some record, some old disco record. And I'll be like, ah, I said, I'm supposed to play this. And he'll bring it to me and it's all, the drummer's all off beat. He don't stay on beat. I said, I'm supposed to mix this in. I said, people like this? And so he was like, yeah, he kept trying it. And I said, I can't believe people like this. You know what?
I don't feel this.
I can't keep telling you. Come to the music box. And so he brought me there. And when I came, it was just crazy. That was the very first time I ever seen a DJ having people around them screaming and yelling and saying stuff. I was like, wow, this guy's like a God up in this place.
But have you been to many clubs before?
In yeah.
Chicago? Yeah. But it was the first time this connection was so huge.
Okay. Yeah, they just be like, it just be normal, but...
This was not normal.
This was not normal. Them people were going insane. And then I was like, I just got baptized into the whole thing.
I was saying like it's a religion. It was a religious kind of, you know, energy
and
movement.
It was like you felt the energy. Before then, I didn't even know what to be in love with the music was. It was just playing. But after that, and I started going there, I was caught in the trance and I was totally in love with everything that was going on. And that's when I understood what that level of having love and dancing and listening to the DJ was all about. It wasn't like that before. So it was an experience that I had to have to be able to become the DJ and the producer that I am now. So out of that experience, I've heard someone like Ron Hardy play everything disco, playing Fingers Inc. house tracks, you know, Marshall Jefferson tracks. And then he, you know, he ended up playing another one, Bites the Dust. And then one day he even played Dougie Fresh.
Oh my God.
It's like he's just going wherever he want to go. You didn't hear that. And the amazing thing is, like, when someone does that, that night becomes a special experience for them.
Yeah, it's a voyage. It's very different because you never know where you're going to go.
Yeah, you
and neither does the DJ, maybe.
It's a journey.
Yeah,
Whereas today, if a DJ plays techno, that's it. That's all you're going to get out of him. It's techno. And he's not even going to play any old techno. He's going to play the latest, greatest tracks, and that's that.
And the not released stuff.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
And that's it. And the people don't leave there with no real impact. Like, wow, the way when he did this and when he did that. It's like they just leave there like just like, okay, yeah, it was a good party or whatever. But it's nothing that 20 years from now they're going to remember. Like, I remember so many different nights with Ron Hardy. So when I DJ, I try to create as best I can a type of experience, whereas a few unexpected twists and turns may happen. And the thing is, being a DJ, you know, if it's not your own club, like Ron Hardy was playing his own club.
At his own, yeah.
So he knew whatever was going to work because that's his people. They're all groomed. So when you play in different places every time, you never know what's going to happen. It could be a hit or miss. But you know that if it is a miss, you know that you can come back with whatever. And they're not even going to remember that.
Yeah.
But if it's a hit, they take that with them for the rest of their life.
Yep.
They're going to remember that forever. And then that night is connected to you, how you made them feel. Because people, they remember more about how you made them feel more than what you said or done. They remember how you made feelings.
The emotions. The emotions and forever. The journey as well. So because, that's what you tried.
So because of that, it made me have an open mind toward producing music.
That's so good of an explanation. Yeah. And that's how it really makes sense on how you came to Acid then. Because you're like, okay, I have this whole history. Mm. So how can I just turn the history, but keeping it and turning
it? The other side of that is we were very critical of people making music then. If I made a track that sounded like another artist, people are going to diss me for sounding like that other artist. I'm not going to be held up for sounding like them. Whereas today, people, they come out sounding all the same. You don't know one producer from another producer unless you see their name on the record. But so we were trying desperately to have our own niche.
Signature. And
so that, yeah, signature sound. So during the creation of just producing, I just needed to find that thing that was different. And through messing around with the Thrill 3, that was it. Because I was looking for different. Because you got to ask yourself, why no one before?
You didn't want to blend in, but you had also to have the culture of what was surrounding you
to make that happen. Yeah, it had to fit into what was going on. And also, I wasn't thinking of no other DJ but Ron Hardy. Had I been thinking of Frankie Knuckles, I would have never made Acid. Because he wouldn't have played that.
Okay.
And remember, everything you did at the time was based on wanting a particular DJ to play your track. So I knew Ron Hardy played all kind of stuff, all kind of crazy stuff, finger sync sounds, all kind of crazy noises, bops and bleeps and all that
stuff. So he could go anywhere.
So he would go anywhere. So because I came up under him, it was like the perfect storm, me coming in contact with that machine.
That's like huge. Thank you so much.
So now people aren't encouraged that in that way. They're encouraged to stay in the box.
Yes.
They're not going to go outside because, whoa, I might be canceled.
The only way out, I may see today that you don't have because you already have your particular signature. Mm-hmm. The only way out I see out of this is collaborations. Because when people work together, mm-hmm, they can like push a bit themselves, a bit like you did back in the day, but they can push themselves against, even against sometimes a label and saying, oh, we are the two of us, so we're going to make that, you know?
Right.
But by themselves, I agree with you, it's very, very difficult today. Yeah. Because like you, as a signature artist, you can't put a signature by yourself. It's much more difficult.
The fact is, I'm still a very curious person, individual. Meaning, so anything I see, I have a little curiosity about it. You know, if it looks different, I'm like, huh, what's that? You know, or if it's a surface, I'm like, I'll touch it. I'm like, oh, that looks different.
Yeah, but there is a very visual side to your work as well. I mean, from what I read and heard, that's why also I compared you to Cubists a little bit, because you also chose apparently the name Acid, not only because of drugs, I think. More compared to the texture of the sound that you created.
Well, the funny story about that is I didn't know that was about drugs. I was very innocent in that regard. I thought acid was just about the chemical. I heard of acid rock and acid jazz.
That can eat some material.
Right, and I just think, oh, that must mean that it's just that rough sound. It's gritty. It's burning. It'll burn through. It's just different. It's the rough edge of the other sound. So it's just a rougher version of whatever the natural sound is.
That's why you said that acid could eat any other sound or track, right? If you put acid on a sound.
Yeah.
And that's why you named it.
Well, that's why it made sense to me. But I did
not... More like painting then, because if you put acid with the painting, can eat. It's much more a painter logic than a musician one. Right?
Funny thing is, when people was connecting it to drugs, I was like, well, why are they doing it? And then that's when I learned that that's not the reason why it was acid jazz or acid rock. It was about drugs. And I was like, huh? I didn't know that. And then so what happened is, that's why I made the song Your Only Friend on the other side, because I wanted to write a song that was not promoting the use of, so I made that song on the same EP.
Yes, but at the same time, when it came to UK and other countries like that, acid house was kind of forbidden because it was promoting drugs.
And exactly, and I was like,
on the political level,
no.
Yeah.
Do you know that I have not done any of those drugs?
I don't know. I never asked the question.
I just didn't.
Took acid in your life?
No. Oh no.
Okay.
No. Marijuana, all that stuff. I didn't do any of that stuff.
Yeah, but like the acid with, you know, the visual of the like...
Yeah.
Never.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
And you created acid.
Even later in life. I didn't do it because it wasn't something that I wanted to do. Even alcohol. It's like, I don't drink, but if someone makes a toast, I'll take the sip of wine or whatever. But other than that,
symbolic,
I still don't drink.
Yeah.
Like, I don't just drink at all. I have never really done it. So I tried to do it when I was turned 21 and I would get a headache
like in
or
the
whatever.
US, yeah.
And I was like, oh, I don't like how I feel. It don't taste good. So I was like, I don't need it.
Then oh, sure.
So I just never did it.
So the founder of Acid never took acid.
I know. That's
like
very
big scoop.
That's
my
very
God.
Disappointing to people.
No, it's
like,
not.
Oh, you just let that.
It's not because you're actually on a vibe that you can understand everyone because you're on the universal vibe. As long as you take something, get mm-hmm. out of the. This is true. I mean,
well, and then also.
So
I'm
many
very,
artists say
I'm
that.
I'm very defiant. In school, my friends kept saying, yeah, I bet you, you know, you'll do it. You'll do this. And, you know, and I was like, okay, you know what? I'll never do it. Watch. And then that's the thing, too. I was like, yep, I told you.
I told you I was not going to.
Right.
Not just, I get the logic, but it's like being in this business for so many years
yeah,
and actually
yeah.
created a word that yeah. became a part of actually the house culture.
Yeah.
And that everybody relates to that and says, oh, because I listen to this, maybe I need to take like LSD, you know? Like,
it's true.
This is amazing. I mean, to know, you know?
Yeah.
And do you think then, out of the drug part, how do you think acid became a culture in itself today? And what is acid to you now? Like, because it was something back in 85, it evolved like to something much
well,
more universal.
Acid to me.
Today, yeah.
It now... is to me is a divergent, like meaning that it's when you're connected to the word acid, that means you're saying you're outside of the mainstream. You're not a conformative person. You're a divergent. So I label myself as a divergent.
Diversion, okay.
And in this world, the certain governmental systems, they don't really like divergence.
Yeah.
And that's why schooling is the way it is. Is to weed out the divergence, is to make a culture where there are no divergences. But if you are a divergent, it's almost guaranteed, you're guaranteed to be found out through the system of schooling.
Oh, I completely understand, yeah. There is a track actually called The Four Agreements. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Oh, I haven't heard of it.
I'm going to send it to you. It's exactly what you said about, it's actually a voice, but it's just explain how you, it's all about diversion and how you are create diverse.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Really, really interesting.
And I think we need to be, because you'll never have a revolutionary come up in any culture if there are no divergence, because that he will be the diverse. And actually, most of the people that we are proud of and celebrate for their work of art or their role in history, they were rebels.
Yes.
So the rebels created the best parts of humanity.
But you are one too. That's why I'm asking you. No, but really.
Definitely. I think about the youth movement from Acid House. That's kind of why we have this festival culture in a way, you know. And that's why they hated it. Because these kids were... In fact, one thing I want to say is we need to be proud of this whole culture of music that we're in right now, including EDM and the festivals and everything. Because we have to fight for that. Believe it or not, at the early stages when it was being born, they tried to snuff it out. Talking about, oh, this music is drug music. They have created laws to prevent us from doing in the UK and everything.
It
like
was all
good
in a way. Yep.
Yeah. So they were trying to squash that. They wanted to destroy this thing.
That's crazy.
So that's when I think about it, we're not appreciating what we have here. Because people got put in jail. It's like a civil rights movement, kind of, you know.
In musical terms, but
yeah.
Yeah,
in musical terms. Like, it was crazy. They had special investigative law enforcement units that would sneak and try to infiltrate these things and shut them down. They had I-team news, special news teams in the UK just trying to kill this thing.
It's still happening now in some ways.
Yeah.
Because of COVID, including.
Yeah, yeah. They're trying to do it by destroying the clubs.
Yes.
Actually trying to make it very difficult.
Yes.
And I'm saying we got to fight for this. We got to keep fighting for it. It's not something you fight once. Oh, good. We won. No, you better keep fighting because that push is going to come back again when we slack off. And I feel like right now we need the youth to start fighting again and stop being like a deer in headlights with cameras and stuff. And it's like, listen, this music, if you want this to continue, it's very important. And we have to really appreciate this music and fight for the people that really made it possible.
So to create the place where diversion can be possible.
Exactly.
Huh. Yeah, Silencio is one. Thank God. I don't know for how long, but yeah. We have at least one, you know.
Right.
But yeah, it's pretty much to create this and to keep these spaces alive. Because yeah. If you get to the main ones, then it's not very diverse.
No, not at all. And then most of those people they're very conformative.
Yeah, talking about
they're not divergent at all.
No, like if we skip to actually, it was my next question, but the format of the tracks, because the first track you made was 30 minutes long, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, and I heard you saying that it was very interesting because people, when you played it at when it was played at Music Box, people first were shocked. They were like, "What?" And then but they had 30 minutes to process the track. So to make them feel many different stuff. Sorry.
What Ron Hardy did was, when he listened to the track, when we took it to him, he didn't say a word. He listened to the full 30 minutes.
Without a word.
Not in his head or nothing.
And you were there like sitting and saying nothing. 30 minutes.
He likes it. Ooh. That's what we were saying. But when he finished, he said, "When can I get a copy?" And then we were like, he's excited. But that night...
The worst 30 minutes of your life then, maybe.
He played it four times. But you know why he played it four times? Because he kept dropping it in and taking it out. So he'd drop it in for like less than a minute, 30, 40 seconds, 50 seconds.
To alert people a little bit.
Right. And then later on, an hour or so later, he come back with it. And people like, what is he doing? And then so... The third time he came back with it more, and people didn't stop dancing. They just like, because the party was too hype for them to stop dancing. They just was like, okay, we'll just wait till this track. And then he came out. And then the last time he just straight up slammed it in. And we're like, what is this track? So he like totally indoctrinated them into that. He had to test and keep getting them used to it.
Diversity strategy again.
Genius.
Yeah,
that's what I think about. It's like, what? I didn't think about that then. But when I look back over the years, it's like, wait a minute. It was an intelligence to how he was doing it. It was genius to me. And he like totally made them accept it by doing it like that. And I think about the world today. They do that to us all the time.
That was my question. When a track today is at best, thank you for Time by Pachanga Boys, limited to 10 minutes. How do you do that?
Oh, when a track is long like that?
No, but 10 minutes is already huge today. But
the
average of electro track is 2-3. How do you do it? How can you disrupt people the way it was? They were disrupted back then with like 4 minutes.
While you're DJing, you create the disruptions in how you DJ. So that's why I work the EQs and the filters the way I do. Sometimes you need a break and the track isn't breaking down at that point. So you create a break through the filters and the effects, and you keep it interesting like that, you know.
So that's where the DJ part is so important.
Yeah.
It's not the track that is important, the way you play it as well.
Yeah. Oh, of course. I mean... And it has to make sense. Like, think of it like this. When we made a mix from the 80s and the 90s, you didn't do it. Of course, you weren't doing it on the computer. You had all the parts and you had a mixing board and you hit play, boom. And that play, you're performing the mix live. So you're listening to it, you're punching things in and out, and you're vibing with it, and you're like, and then out of nowhere, I feel like a breakdown. I hit, boom. You break it down, you bring it back, and you do this in the mix. Now, mixes aren't made that way. They're all thought out. So you're saying a thing needs a break, but it's not because you feel like it needs a break. It's because, 32 bars went by. It's time for something to happen right here. And it's all mathematic and all this kind of stuff. And you're making music from your brain. You're not making it from your heart and soul. So if you make music that's not from your heart and soul and you put it out there, it's not going to impact people the same way either. They're not going to feel it in their heart and soul because it didn't even come from that place. It came from a, a, too much of a thoughtful type of place, and music is supposed to be making you feel something
and get you out of somewhere as well.
Yeah,
it's not gonna get them out of themselves in that way. Then it's gonna just keep them in it, in where they are at the moment. It's not gonna take them somewhere else, right?
Yeah, it should move you emotionally.
Yeah, in a way or another, but it should move you somehow.
And if you listen to music now. Because number one, it's so similar. Everybody's making such similar music. And this isn't just in electronic music. I don't care what music it is. Even the chord progressions are all the same. Everything is just, this whole world is lockstep. This is everything. I don't care where you go. I mean, I used to travel to one country and hear music I'd never heard before. Hear house songs I'd never heard. I'm hearing the vibe of that city. You can't get that no more. Because
you go anywhere, it's the same
track. It's the same music. Yeah. No matter where you go, there it is. What is that? So then you got a whole world of people on the same vibe. That's weird.
That's really weird.
Like, I don't understand how people like that. Like, I mean, you can't go to get a different vibe. What's the point in going there if you go there and it's the same thing that where you came from?
Do you think it's related to the fact that it's actually music that is thought and not felt, and that's how it's all uniformized a bit?
I think because the influences are all the same. Before, when it was just records and vinyl, they didn't even get vinyl, certain vinyls. It wasn't even available to find where they were. So they were in their own little economic
bubble
system.
Yeah.
And I love that. What we love about that, the powers that be hate that, because in order to control everyone, you got to be able to reach them all and have them on the same accord. You can't have these people here that's moving to their own beat of the drum and then say, they ain't moving how you wanted to move. So you got to first break down all the barriers and make it one system. And that's really what's going on. And it's affecting every walk of life.
And what do you think is the remedy for that? Except collaborations that we talked about, like teaming up.
Is getting out of the mainstream. Get out of where you normally get your information from. And that's music. Spotify, you don't need to be getting Spotify, Beatport, all that stuff. If that's where everybody is, then you need to not be there. And you need to be on some smaller thing that's not so conformative. Because anything that's a huge platform, next thing you know, they're governed by other people. That's why all the festivals are booking the same 7 to 10 DJ. Everything is just, you're not getting the full variety of what's out there. You're just not. And it's important, if we don't kind of try to figure out how to move away from that. It's like, that's why the underground is important. The underground is not part of the mainstream. And so you are going to be part of a more divergent society if you're dealing with the underground.
Yeah, but how, it's very, I think today, when you have like big DJs that are signed to CAA, like with the biggest actors in the US, how do you maintain the underground alive? How do you, it's like a plant or something like that that is endangered a bit.
It's like a comedian. You ever notice how comedians, they want to go back to the circuit? Like, say you're a big star, Eddie Murphy, I don't know, some big comedian, they do all these movies. Then they get disillusioned.
Yeah.
And then they're like, I gotta get back to my roots. I gotta start doing these shows in these small
venues. Blah, blah, blah.
Because they gotta get out of that and reconnect.
That happened to actually Patrice Baumel that I had for a previous episode, who was doing big venues and stuff. And at some point he said, I wanna come back to something much smaller where I began, because that is where I come from.
Yeah.
And I cannot give proper music or provide people if I don't even know where I come from.
Right.
Right. Is that the same?
Once you reconnect to that, you start to feel that fire burn again. And it's hard, meaning that it's easy. When I play big festivals, easy. It's easy. I don't care what I do. They're just happy. They're just happy to be there. You go in a small venue, you better bring it. You better be coming with some fire. You gotta know how to connect and move these people. Because a big festival, that's a mass formation right there. They're just gonna move with the flow of everything, you know. But you go to the small places.
You have to take them one by one.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
when there are like five people on the dance floor and you have to take yeah. these five.
Yep, yep.
And not 5,000, right?
Yep. And get then, it. You know, I like to see people. But I'm like, you'll feel something like, yeah, that guy right there, I think he's old school. Watch, I'm gonna drop some of that in.
For him,
he, yeah. He gonna get it. You know, so you kind of could pick people out and be able to, you know, address them where they are and stuff like that, you know.
And to actually address our audience a little bit, a playlist, track or set of yours that you would recommend for someone who wishes to discover you and know more about you, if yes. there's any like playlist, track, like anything.
I don't even do playlists.
That's what I was afraid of.
Playlist. Like, I don't have a playlist. I don't listen to playlists. It's like, what is that, on Spotify or something?
Not even. It could be like a SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.
Because SoundCloud yeah. is personal. It's like your profile and you pick whatever you want.
I have SoundCloud and it's like, I got like over 100 tracks on SoundCloud and they're all private.
Okay.
Because I only upload the SoundCloud so I can listen to it.
Yeah, myself. It's for your professional use only.
Right. But right. It's like, but you know what? I just like to, the reason how I stay at least with my own creative spirit and energy is I depart from most things. I don't listen to podcasts too much, or not podcasts, but DJs too much. I do, but then I don't. Like, I've always been this way, though. I just don't want to be influenced too much.
But how did you come, for example, to Monkey Safari, that is like super, like the very trendy right now?
The label actually brought them in. And I think that's what I would like to do, is always link with someone who's very much in, was maybe close to the mainstream, and then take that and work with them and bring the best from both worlds together.
That's amazing. Yeah.
That's what I would love to do.
And that's what on the remix. I mean, to me, yeah, it's like
that's,
completely.
That's what
and we yeah. hear you and we mm-hmm. hear them. But it's also super nice fusion. It's mm-hmm. not this, and it's disruptive because it's both of you.
Yeah,
that's exactly. really interesting.
And I think if you can create, and that's what I think festivals should be aiming to do. They should be aiming to book more guys like myself in conjunction with the mainstream guys, so that when the people come, they're getting a beautiful infusion. And then you broaden their awareness of something they don't get exposed to, you know, and then
disruption. Way,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Disruption. And then we're there.
Disrupt that, what they've been always getting.
Yeah. So I'm going to like maybe put this track and like those who like the album we talked about mm-hmm. in off. I'll put them in just not a playlist, but on the notes mm-hmm. so people can listen to that.
The thing is, it's the energy that's important. It's not even the music. It's what energy is whatever music brings. You know, you can have the same energy with multiple styles of music.
Yes.
And I think that's what's really important to the people when it's...
On the same energy.
Yeah.
And on that note, I will put the copy of what you wrote on Facebook that is so important.
Definitely.
And it's about energy mm-hmm. and the lack of energy we kind of could experience into music today and how to bring it back.
Absolutely.
And if you want to sum it up for us a little bit, or I just put the text on the notes. But I put the whole text because I think okay. it's very interesting. And yeah. it's just to see like how we could go to a future, because that's also the name of what yeah. you created.
Yeah, exactly.
How we can go to future with that type of thought and philosophy. So
I think we got it.
So great. Thank you so much, Pierre, for taking the time to talk about acid in all aspects with us tonight.
Exactly.
We wish you a wonderful set.
Thanks.
And we're looking forward for your next projects and collaborations too.
I am so much ready to get it going.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Be on time and space.
Merci à tous pour votre écoute. N'hésitez pas à nous suivre et à nous partager sur votre plateforme d'écoute préférée. Vous pouvez aussi mettre des étoiles pour dire que vous avez beaucoup aimé. Vous pouvez également nous suivre sur Instagram @trackrecorddj pour découvrir la playlist de notre invité ainsi que des contenus vidéo inédits. À très vite pour un nouvel épisode de Track Record.